once I'd like to find myself standing in your shoes, singing the other woman's blues.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Woohoo! That's me. Thank you so much for tuning in today. WNRN Sunday morning wake-up call. A big shout-out to those folks in Lovingston on the 94.7. Hopefully you're inside where it is air-conditioned, because it's not so hot, but it's the humidity that wears me out. And a big happy birthday to Hershey. We went walking in the park today, and Steve and Eileen were there with Hershey, the one-year-old. And guess what the color is of Hershey? He looks just like that Hershey chocolate brown. Happy birthday to Hershey. We had a good time. With the dogs and with Hershey. Also, kind of a sad day today. Kristen's last day before she goes away to college. So, Kristen, off to Longwood. She'll be back a few times in the future. But a graduate of Western Albemarle High School and moving on to the next step. So you're welcome to call up and wish her congratulations during the hour, as well as we go through with our topic. We are going to talk about sugar in the school systems. Let me check these microphones. And we're going to go from my left to right across the room. Dr. Paul Lyons. Paul, how are you?
Well, thanks for having me today.
Thank you. Ivana Cadilla. Ivana?
Great to be here, Rick.
Ivana is from the chairwoman from the School Health Advisory Board. And Dr. Martin Albert. Marbert?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you, Rick.
It's always nice when people say that. Makes me feel special. All right, we are talking about sugar in the school systems. Ivana, the chairwoman for the School Health Advisory Board in the city,
yes,
of Charlottesville, right? But the topic certainly covers a greater range. Albemarle has been in the news over the past couple of years about vending machines in the school system, and certainly much of what they serve in the school system can be applied from what you know directly about the city, correct?
I would think so.
Yes. So for those who are listening throughout the listening area, whether you're in Richmond or Lovingston, over in the Valley in Harrisonburg, the topic is still important to you. All right, let's just jump into things. We have Dr. Martin Albert from Virginia Integrative Medicine. We have Dr. Paul Lyons, who is a neurologist at UVA. And then we have Ivana Cadilla, chairwoman from the School Health Advisory Board. One of the first things I want to ask, and Ivana, since you seem to be, I guess, the leader of the topic, not just here in the room, but certainly throughout the city, that's why you were made the chairwoman, or certainly I give you that because you are the chairwoman, and we'll put the pressure on you.
Okay.
What are the current nutritional standards, because that's part of the complaint, right, is that the state standards, or maybe it's the federal standards, are, what word would you use? I think of atrocious.
Well, there are the overall standards, Rick, and those apply to the many different macronutrients and micronutrients that we have identified, or the USDA has identified, as being essential for children to have. And then there's specifically the category of, let's say, the things we might want to limit and have identified as being unhealthy. And those standards are the ones I'd really like to talk about specifically. So the federal government basically says the maximum amount of sugar you can have in any individual serving of something at a school is 35% by weight. I personally find that to be atrocious.
Give me a visual picture in my head.
Imagine baking something And having a third of the weight, the third of your pile of whatever the components are of what you're making, is sugar. I would identify that as a dessert. I'm not sure if you would. And that is the standard we have for anything on that tray at breakfast or at lunch, or any beverage, really, also.
That's probably a lot of sugar for lunch. As someone who just spent a month ago, I went to the beach, and I think for breakfast every day, not my normal breakfast, but one of my brothers-in-law went out and bought donuts. Mm-hmm. And then after people sort of woke up and consumed the donuts, and somebody made waffles.
Excellent.
So, and then about 10:30, I took a nap. And I say that in a joking fashion, but oh so true for like 5 days in a row. So you're talking about sugar by weight, and that is a state standard or a federal standard?
Federal.
Okay. Is Virginia any different than the federal standard?
No. Almost every public school in the country uses these guidelines. They're set by the USDA on a federal level using the school nutrition program. And, everybody kind of has those guidelines. What I'm hoping today we can talk about a little bit more is that those aren't guidelines for healthy eating. By admission of the USDA, those are guidelines for the maximum amount you could put into food before you start to crowd out the things you really need, the essential micronutrients.
What's it for if it's not for health? I mean, you say it's healthy eating. So, I mean, what's the purpose of setting the standard? What are they setting it for? What's the percentage for if it's not for providing a healthy breakfast?
It seems that because we don't have definitive studies that everyone can agree on, that clearly state that it's unhealthy to have a certain amount, the USDA and various organizations like the Institutes of Medicine and the American Academy of Pediatrics have decided to set these because they kind of figure, well, you know, if kids are getting 25% of their calories in sugar, hopefully they'll still be getting some of the essential micronutrients that they need.
Okay.
I mean, that's the official answer. Personally, I have no idea why you would want to have that much sugar.
Rick, this is Marty Albert talking. Let me jump in for a second and make the distinction between a diet that's not going to make you sick versus a diet that's really going to help you be healthy. And, you know, the standard American diet, or the SAD diet, as people in the business call it, or the meat sweet diet, as it's also called, is not going to make you sick immediately. It will make you sick over time, which is why one statement that might help to sort of set the stage for this and give people a perspective. We are the first generation to see our children have a shorter life expectancy and worse health than we had. This is historical, and this is because of the acceptable, to a large degree, because of what we consider the acceptable diet. So this is the playing field in which these standards are set, that kids are not going to get salmonella from tainted foods. They're not going to get poison from foods that have heavy metals or pesticides in them. But they're not going to have a healthy life from eating foods that are healthy. These are foods that are compatible with the diet that most people eat, that's accepted as the standard diet, that will over time give them early diabetes. And just to give you a sense of that, a study in a prominent medical journal, Journal of the American Medical Association, several years ago, looked at current trends and said that as things stand now, children born in the year 2000, our kids, who are now 11 years old, have a likelihood in their lifetime, girls have a 36% likelihood, boys a 33% likelihood of having diabetes. And for Hispanic children, Hispanic girls have a 50% likelihood of having diabetes. This is according to eating with the minimum acceptable standards, which is why we want to see not the minimal acceptable standards, but we want to see foods that are going to make the kids healthy and give them a sense of what a healthy diet is. So I'll pass this back to Ivana.
Oh, we are talking about sugar in the school systems. Our guest today, that was Dr. Marty Albert. We also have Dr. Paul Lyons. We have Ivana Cadilla, who is the chairwoman for the School Health Advisory Board. And a little later in the hour, we're going to talk about what the board did with the presentation that was made and any decisions that were made by the city school board. The phone number, if you have a question today or a comment, 979-0919-1877. WNRN Rocks. And don't forget, as we were talking about beforehand, this isn't a conversation limited to parents. We're going to be talking about the money that goes into putting this food together and deciding what is the standard for the school system. And as Dr. Albert was just discussing, the money that may be needed to put forth later on in years from now. So 979-0919-1877, WNRN Rocks. That's the toll-free line if you need to use that. Dr. Lyons, let's pull you into the conversation.
Sure.
We talk about the minimal standards. And the work that I've seen from you talks about the effect of the minimal standards on the kids medically today. Not where you might be with diabetes in years from now, but the effect that it has on the student during the academic day.
That's right. I train at UVA and now practice in a clinic in Shenandoah Valley focusing on epilepsy, and see a lot of childhood neurodevelopmental problems, including problems of attention, concentration, and autism spectrum disorder conditions. And in terms of two conditions I see a lot of, that is epilepsy and ADHD or ADD syndromes, I see in many cases significant effect of diet on symptoms, including seizures. There's been a lot of work done over the last 15 years of an old diet that goes back over 100 years of diet high in protein and healthy fats, that is a ketogenic diet, on controlling seizures. And there's been a lot of first-hand cases of young children who have been withdrawn from school because of frequent seizures and have a lot of social isolation, who actually have been made seizure-free or who can go back to those social activities just by modifying their diet where medications and even surgical procedures fail.
In my memory from, I guess I saw a YouTube video where you had spoken. Oh, and Ivana, your mm-hmm. your webpage mm-hmm. is Yourishment, not Nourishment, correct?
Yeah.
But Y-O-U-R-ishment.
Exactly.
.com. And I think you use that webpage for a personal business as well, so I don't want to tell people to go there to purchase things from you or do anything from you, but there's a section of it that follows the conversation that we're having today.
Yes, and that would be if you click on the page called School or Blog. On the blog, I've predominantly been blogging about school things.
And Dr. Lyons, my memory is that is where your YouTube-ish video can be found. And you talk about the kids eating this sort of breakfast and then needing a nap, like they had donuts and waffles on the beach during the day. The academic standards for a different socioeconomic status, I mean, does that come into play at all in terms of who needs the breakfast from the school system? Because there are the breakfast that we're talking about, does the school sell the breakfast, or are these the free breakfasts that are provided for those who meet the standard for the free food?
We provide in the schools breakfast to all the children that would like to have it. So that's the short answer.
But that is those who need it.
You know, I believe that we provide it to all children, because when my kids arrived at Clark last year and the year before, they were offered the breakfast and we hadn't paid for it. So I'm pretty sure that they're offered to all the kids.
And what sort of effect, Dr. Lyons, what effect are you saying that this has in an academic manner? Because that's what I remember from the video, mm-hmm. is you saying that there is some... you mentioned seizures before, but yeah. to get away from that and just talk about grades in general for how a child does academically through the school year.
On a case-by-case basis, when I work with the parents with these children who have problems with attention and concentration in school, ultimately what all our efforts focus on is the academic performance of the child in the school and their development and their acquiring important milestones in development, both socially and academically. And, you know, on a case-by-case basis or anecdotally, there have been cases where we've tried several medications that are classic for control of and attention, and without any significant effect. And modifying dietary intake has had meaningful impact on their kids. And more often than not, the mothers will modify what the kids eat for breakfast. That has increased the protein and the fat and decreased the carbohydrate. In those cases, we worked on a case-by-case basis. The feedback I get from the parents is the teachers report meaningful changes in attention and concentration beyond what we can get with medications.
When a child eats a high carb, like lots of refined sugars and refined carbs, breakfast or lunch, you can pretty well bet that a couple of hours later, their blood sugar is going to tank, and they're going to be fussy and irritable and not paying attention, and not just talking about children who have ADD or seizures, but the average healthy attentive child is not going to be at their best when they have a meal that's not a healthy meal, even if it meets the FDA minimal requirements. That by itself is not going to make them happy, attentive students. Teachers know this.
Yes.
You can talk to teachers and they'll tell you. So eating a breakfast, eating a lunch that has healthy carbs, that are complete carbs, that aren't going to drop their blood sugar an hour to 2 hours later, and healthy fats, is going to help maintain their energy and attention and good nature, of which kids do have kind of inherently, but can get distorted with poor nutrition.
11:18 here in the wake-up call. We are talking about sugar in the school systems. Dr. Marty Albert, Dr. Paul Lyons, Ivana Cadilla, you're welcome to call with your question, or you can send me an instant message, WNRN Studio. Dial us up at 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me take a moment and thank Dixon Disposal for allowing us to have the conversation today. They want to remind you that you can reduce your household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come, and when Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Call them, 978-2111, online, DixonDisposal.com. I see the phone ringing right now. Kristen will get that. And I toss this question out there to all three of you. What's better, a bad breakfast in the morning or no breakfast in the morning?
I know each of you guys will have an answer to that, but I've heard that actually repeatedly from folks who have kids or don't have kids, that there's this belief that somehow anything is better than nothing. And I can support that anything can be better than nothing, except when it comes to sugar, simple sugar and added sugars that are exacerbating often the situation. I'm sure many people, you know, would disagree with me about that, but I feel that we need to really strive to improve what's there and not to give kids something that, as Dr. Albert said, is going to create behavioral issues during the morning classes.
All right, we got a caller. Let's do that, and then we'll come back to the rest of the question. And Claire, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
All right, Claire.
Good morning.
Question, comment?
Yes, I am an education researcher and interested in self-control issues, and I wondered if the guest could speak to the food industries and the the companies that provide the food to the schools and the influence of that on the situation.
All right, I'm going to let him talk. Thanks for calling, Claire.
Thank you.
If I, this is Marty Albert, if I were an executive in a food company that made sugary cereals, donuts, and I was making a big profit and my stockholders were happy and I was going to get a big bonus next year because of the profits from turning out these cheap, poor quality foods that are very popular, I would be very resistant to see things change. And if I were the head of a pharmaceutical company that was selling $6 billion worth of a diabetic drug each year, or a drug that controls cholesterol, lowers cholesterol, and I read the studies that I mentioned that anticipate that we're going to see 4 or 5 times as many people with diabetes and heart disease, and I thought, gee, that's going to increase my sales by 4 to 5 times, I might be a little resistant to see things change. So you're not going to see industry jump in and get very enthusiastic about eating healthy foods. And the fruit raisers and the industry that raises corn and corn products is going to have a lot more clout than the apple growers or the people who raise broccoli, the truck farmers. So you're not going to see a fair representation.
Those are excellent points, and Claire, it's an excellent question that you're asking. What I found as I delved into this over the past 2 years and got deeper and deeper into why we could possibly have a 35% sugar limit per serving of any individual item in our schools and how anybody could possibly consider that as healthy, I ultimately did come up against the power of the sugar industry. We have an industry here that is being subsidized by our tax dollars. We're paying to subsidize the production of corn so we can make more corn syrup, of wheat so we can make more refined carbohydrates, because those are the ones that people seem to prefer according to the industry, and more soy so we can get more unhealthy soy oils into all of these processed foods. Trying to dig into how the USDA could have possibly allowed itself to come to this place, what I ultimately discovered is actually the USDA is sort of playing both sides, pressure from the industry and from the fact that, you know, we as a country are producing enormous amounts of these foods, and the USDA's job is to help sell American food, ultimately, and frankly, that's their primary job. A secondary job is to watch over the health of Americans, and many people believe that those two are in a dire conflict that just doesn't work. So the way that the USDA seems to have resolved it is to give us these kinds of very confusing, let's say, guidelines on things that they themselves have identified as unhealthy, like sugar. Added sugar in particular, partially hydrogenated oil, and kind of bury them in a way that they can't really be deciphered by people and allow people to think that those are guidelines about how healthy things should be done. But if you really dig into the actual USDA documentation and information and USDA dietary guidelines, you will find that they recommend that no more than 10% of our daily calories, regardless of our age, should come from saturated fat or added sugars. We're giving kids a lot more than that just at school.
All right, 11:24 in the wake-up call. Our guests today, Dr. Marty Albert, Dr. Paul Lyons, and Ivana Cadilla, as we talk about sugar in the school systems. Let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy today, scattered showers and thunderstorms about 40%. Highs 85 to 90, lower 90s in Richmond. Partly cloudy tonight, 20% chance of showers. Clearing after midnight, 62 to 67, and mid-70s in Richmond. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny, 30% chance of showers. Highs 90 to 95. Right now, it's some clouds out there, 80 in the valley, 75 in Lynchburg, 82 in Richmond, 86 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for listening to us today. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. We need to thank Vehicles for Charity. If you, in conjunction with Vehicles for Charity, donating your car is a way to make a donation to WNRN. These donations help our budget. For more information on donating your unwanted car in support of our programming, it's WNRN.org, and find the car donation link. And we also want to thank you for listening and everybody who supported us during the recent fund drive. We couldn't make the music you love or have the show here on Sundays without listeners like the Buckharts, Elaine Chester, and John Herman, who donated in March. And we also want to thank sponsors like Sticks Kebab and Crazy Horse Studio for underwriting the programs. If you appreciate what we do, then show your support by calling into the next fund drive in September, or you can donate anytime on WNRN.org. All right, 979-0919. If you have a call, question, or a comment, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Send the instant message on the AOL to WNRN Studio. Marty, I cut you off there at the very end. We were talking about Ivana's comment on the the poor food that's out there that we're serving.
Well, I was going to just toss in that the fast food industry in a recent year, which is the data I have, spent $6 billion advertising fast food. The government had a budget, I think it was the Department of Agriculture, had a budget proposed for next year of $17 million. Now, we're talking about $6 billion versus $17 million, and now with all the budget stuff going on, I don't know how much, if any, of that's going to be left, to promote healthy foods. So that gives you a picture of what kids are up against and what we're up against in getting good information. These decisions about what is healthy are generally, as Ivana said, political and economical, not health-based decisions.
I don't know who has the answer to this question. Paul, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. A question that has come in is, what do countries known for healthier diets serve in their schools? And what do countries known for better academics serve?
Wow. Do you want to take that one, Paul?
I'm going to hand that off to you, Ivana.
Thanks. Okay. I have read up on, for example, France, where the children are served a 5-course meal for lunch.
Full of butter and cream, right?
I kid you not.
France
yes,
is known
well,
for their butter, cream,
their butter, cream,
their bread,
their
and their wonderful desserts.
And their excellent cheeses as well. Now, these different courses are cooked, I think, generally from scratch. Now, even France may be moving away from that, but this was something I heard just within the last 2 years. I read about a parent who was an American and had personal experience there. So 5-course meals, they start out with a little bit of salad, maybe a soup, maybe, you know, an entree, a lovely French cheese, and end with perhaps a piece of fruit and maybe on occasion some kind of pastry. Now, I just have to tell you, I don't know, you know, how many folks have had French pastries or whatever. I mean, these things are chock full of fat. And that fat and a little bit maybe less sugar. They're incredibly expensive also.
We all know that fat is bad for you, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the French just are not suffering under the same kind of health issues as we are. So I think we really need to explore what kind of fat they're using and explore this whole issue of fat more. But the fact is the French do not eat the kind of quantities of sugar that we do. That is absolutely,
is that because the food is processed differently? I had a question early on that I think I skipped over was I keep finding the word simple carbohydrates. That, to me, that means that there's a complex carbohydrate, and what in the world is the difference between the two?
Well, Marty has a great answer for that one.
Okay. Well, this is a Rick, this is a very important distinction, and thank you for bringing this up. Carbohydrates that are considered complex carbohydrates would be whole grains. There would be things like whole wheat kernels or ground whole wheat, oatmeal. Quinoa is a wonderful grain. Millet. All these things, brown rice, these are whole grains. They contain a lot of wonderful nutrients. They contain a lot of fiber, which is important for digestion. They contain a lot of vitamins and minerals. So the whole grain consists of what's called the endosperm and the bran and the, help me, the other part is...
the starch.
The outside kernel.
But it's stuff I don't eat.
Okay.
Nobody
well,
eats
anyway,
that.
when you refine the grain, you leave the endosperm, which has a protein and the starch, but you take away the germ and you take away the bran, and the germ is the live part where the embryo is. So you take these away, and that's where all the fiber is. That's where all the vitamins are. That's where all the minerals are. So what you're left with is only about 10 or 20% of the fiber and only about 7% of the vitamin E and much less potassium and magnesium, all the things that you need to digest and process these foods. So this is the distinction. These are the whole grains, which are the complex carbohydrates, versus the refined grains. Now, the other type of refined carbohydrate is sugar, which can come from a lot of different sources. So we're talking about foods, and this is important because carbohydrates are bunched together, and people are worried about, you know, avoiding carbohydrates or getting carbohydrates, but they're really two very distinct food groups. The complex carbohydrates are essential foods and very healthy, and the refined carbohydrates are really problematic.
We are talking about sugar in the school systems. That's Dr. Marty Albert from Virginia Integrated Medicine. We have Dr. Paul Lyons, who's a UVA neurologist. We have Ivana Cadilla, who's the chairwoman from the School Health Advisory Board. Let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to have the program on today. That is where sports, where you're encouraged to be kind and have fun and do the right thing and eat healthy. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have three Richmond locations. For more information, it's at brms.com. Now, I only sort of joked when I said nobody eats that, because I love my tabbouleh, right? Who doesn't? But if you're going to, how do you get the kids to eat that? I mean, it's almost like you have to put it on the plate for months without giving them anything else to choose from. You take out the vending machine. You check the bags when they come in so that there's no Fritos. Or whatever other company makes stuff. I don't want to pick on one. But how do you get the kids to eat it?
I was at Taste of Ghana 2 days ago. It was an event as part of the 22nd African American Heritage Festival and the kickoff event. And we were served a free meal that was provided by great sponsors of Ghanaian Africa, right? Ghana is in Africa, and of African food that was, let's see, there were some peanut soup with little bits of chicken in it and a beautiful rice ball that was, you know, about the size of a squash ball, and some spinach with a little bit of meat. There was cabbage. Cooked up in a nice light kind of oil, and was the fourth item, and some rice that actually looked like red rice originally. I don't know. There were a bunch of kids at this event, and I was kind of looking around and saying, "What are these kids eating this stuff? Because none of it looked familiar to your typical American, right? I mean, the rice, I guess, but it was kind of reddish. The kids were loving it. and eating it, I think that we underestimate what our children are willing to explore.
But those kids were there by choice of some sort.
They were forced by their parents to come to this Ghanaian Taste of Ghana festival. Well, I think they would have rather been at, you know, Disney World if they had the choice.
Granted, that's probably not true for all. But it sounds like that they come from a family of people with wide variety of interests.
Well, Rick, let me jump in on that, because that's a really, really good point. I think that the kids who would benefit from a healthy school lunch, a healthy school breakfast, the most are the kids who don't have the model of what is a good meal, what is a healthy meal, who all of a sudden are exposed to meals that have wholesome foods. This is, I think, the most benefit or another benefit that kids will get from getting healthy meal choices. And true, we're hardwired to love sweets and to love fats. And given a kid who has no exposure to healthy foods or little exposure, or even one who has but doesn't have a sense of why it's important for them to eat a healthy food, they're going to choose, if they're given the choice, they're probably going to choose the sweet stuff, the greasy stuff. But that's the reason why it becomes so important to give them not a choice, but to really serve them a healthy meal and let that be a role model for them, that this is what a healthy meal looks like and that this is what we can offer them with our desire to have them grow up to be really healthy adults, to not be suffering from chronic diseases, to perform at their best in school, to give their teachers a break and not have to deal with behavioral problems all day, but really be able to teach attentive, interested kids. So there's so many benefits from offering them a healthy meal at school. And to kind of go back to the least common denominator of what the USDA says is kind of the minimum that's not going to harm them, that's not what we want to do for our kids. They're precious. We want to give them the best. We want to make them competitive. We want to make them healthy.
Dr. Lyons, you were talking about the neurological side of things, which, you know, sugar in the school system, that's this seven-hour day. Dr. Albert has spoken about the future. But what do you tell the parent that they should be serving on the importance of the daily basis? Because if the school serves breakfast and the school serves lunch and that's what you allow, what do you, as the UVA neurologist, suggest to the parent to serve for dinner?
Well, you know, from my initial training at UVA and now my practice in the Shenandoah Valley, I focus on what I can have direct impact over. That is the behaviors at home. As a clinician, it falls without the scope and time frame of what we can really effectively do on our clinic evaluations or by phone consultations with the parents. So what I try to focus on is balancing healthy fats with good proteins and minimizing carbohydrates. And
what is that? And I don't mean to interrupt, but
sure.
Again, we go back to the jargon that some of us can understand bits and pieces or maybe all of it. But when I go shopping, I see few people picking up the item and looking at the ingredient list. So without telling me that I have to have the same thing every week for dinner, give me some visual examples of what falls into the categories you're talking about.
Sure. Well, for breakfast, for children who can have problems with migraine headaches if they don't have the right diet or have their headaches exacerbated by a diet or issues of insomnia in the evening, what I focus on, like for instance, breakfast, I'll have them, rather than have a sugary breakfast cereal, which tends to be high in simple carbohydrates, as my colleague here previously described, I'll have them focus on some lean meats, some cheeses, or an egg, and milk. I typically ask the families to pack a lunch that, again, involves some lean meats or turkey or chicken, and bran, so that some of the carbohydrate is not absorbed and helps with constipation, which actually can be a problem for kids and behaviors. And then desserts are, you know, snacks, that is a treat, is restricted to one time of the day, typically in the evening. That's a typical, a critical part of family's rituals. But if there is going to be a sweet component of their diet, I ask them to restrict it rather than to a snack that's throughout the whole day. It's one time, kind of ritualized as part of a dinner. And also, beyond just the chemistry or biochemistry of eating, it's eating, at least in terms of family, particularly at home, there's a social and cultural element to that. And in many cases, I've had families implement a sit-down dinner where the family's there, and they kind of ritualize some of the social behaviors of eating, and it actually also improves how the kids eat, and rather than having, you know, three people eating three different portions of the house, all watching TV or online in chat groups, if people sit down, there's a big cultural element and social element to eating that families can miss out on that I try to encourage families to implement.
All right, thanks. That's what I wanted, was I needed to know what to shop for when I go, or at least where to start. And then as I do a little studies, because I'm going shopping on, you know, later this evening or on Tuesday, I needed to know where to start. Thank you very much. That's Dr. Paul Lyons. Has a Shenandoah Valley Clinic. He's a neurologist. Dr. Marty Albert is here with us. He's from Virginia Integrative Medicine. And Ivana Cadilla, the chairwoman from the School Health Advisory Board, 1141 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority supports a new dam, while new reports suggest dredging would provide ample water without enormous debt. And now, potentially corrupting money comes into play. The Hook takes a deep look at all of the water story. And with the U.S. Postal Service attempting to close small-town offices, there is a reminder of why we still need them. The Hook, no dry cleaning needed. And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be here today. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because at noon, it's Drew Thompson with Les Temps Perdue, best of 80s and 90s alternative. He'll have REM, Devo, Social Distortion, all brought to you in part by Caliente. Requests always welcome on Les Temps Perdue. All right, back with our guests today as we talk about sugar in the school system. You can call up with your question, 979-0919, or comment 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I'll have a question shortly from someone who did send their words through by WNRN Studio at the AOL message. Dr. Albert, I think I clipped you right there at the start.
Well, you had a great question, the kind of the basic question of what to eat. And one good answer of that is you can read some books by Michael Pollan. He's got several good books about what to eat, and he sums it up in 7 words and then takes about 300 pages to explain them. But the 7 words are: eat food, not a lot, mostly plants. And I think the core of this, and a lot of what Ivana has been talking about, is the eat food. Now, how do you define food? He's contrasting food to the food-like substances that you see in the markets primarily today. So what is a food? A food is something that your great-grandmother would have recognized as a food. A food is something that probably has no more than 5 ingredients, that doesn't have any high fructose corn syrup or trans fats, these really, really harmful, partially saturated fats. A food is something that has no words in it, and ingredients that you can't pronounce or sound like something that's in your kid's chemistry class. So those are foods. So basically, foods are real things, and talking about what the French eat, you know, France has the second biggest agricultural output in the world, next to the United States, and produce a lot of wonderful foods. And while many of them are not what we would think of as the healthiest things, nonetheless, they're real whole foods. Mm-hmm. And even the worst of the real whole foods is probably a lot better than the factory-made, modified foods.
And what I didn't mention before about French desserts is they're known for having excellent pastries and desserts, right? But they eat them in much, much smaller quantities than we tend to eat sweets here in America, and they tend to be very expensive. Ours, in America, are some of the cheapest foods you can find.
Somebody told me that what you should do when you go to the grocery store is walk in and then follow the outer skim.
Yeah.
Although I know that one of the grocery stores I shop, one of the outer pieces has a lot of ice cream and frozen dinners. But it applies to much of the thing. That's where the food, the milk, the produce, et cetera, are lined. I don't know that that applies for everyone. Let me get back into this. Again, our guest today, Ivana Cadilla, from the School Health Advisory Board, Dr. Paul Lyons and Dr. Marty Albert. Ivana, the School Health Advisory Board, you put together a group of people to identify how much was too much sugar and what people should do about it, and then you had a presentation to the county school board. Talk
city.
About that.
To the city school board,
school
yeah.
Board, sorry.
Charlottesville City Schools. We spent several months toward the latter part of last year, the School Health Advisory Board's nutrition team, which was comprised of a pediatrician, two parents and myself, to specifically look into what kind of things are out there and what kind of guidelines and what we felt was the low-hanging fruit for us to address from a nutritional standpoint. And we identified sugars, added sugars as one, partially hydrogenated oils, as Marty's mentioned, and sodium. All three of which have also been identified, obviously, by the USDA as well. So we thought this is a great place to start and focus our energy and see how we can do better. And part of the, I think, almost 10-page recommendation for a holistic approach to looking at health in the schools was several pages dedicated to discussing specifically nutrition issues, and asking that we examine how we could lower these kind of maximal guidelines.
Right, make it more nutritious. When you say lower, you're talking about instead of allowing 30-some teaspoons of sugar, dropping it down to 15. But in the government sector, you have until 2022 before you have to do that. I mean, everything is given years and years before you actually have to accomplish it.
They haven't even said anything for sugar. They have somewhat for sodium, and the schools have agreed to align themselves with the current, newer standards of 200 milligrams of sodium per serving. But we're allowing ourselves to wait for the government for changes to the sugar and the partially hydrogenated oil. And I just don't believe I moved to this city because I thought we were that it was a place where lots of wonderful food is grown and there are lots of wonderful, amazing, smart people. And I think Charlottesville can do better.
Well,
I really do. And I think that especially given that Charlottesville ranks 44th in the state in terms of health, should give us some inspiration to start addressing these issues.
All right, 11:49 on the wake-up call with our guest today. We have a call from Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hey.
What you got?
I recently watched a documentary called Cafeteria Man. It was about a guy in Baltimore who was the nutritionist for the city schools. And he, in about 6 months, made incredible changes to their whole system there. Made it locally sourced, whole foods, all sorts of things. I mean, it took a lot of work for him to do. Why, in a city like Charlottesville, which prides itself on what it can get done with all its will and all its wealth, why can we not do better? Why are we so slow?
Ivana, you jump onto that because you've been on this committee, and how many months has the committee been in existence?
The committee since January.
Okay, so 6 months, because you made your presentation in June?
We made a presentation in June because, yeah, the policy was going to be reevaluated.
Okay. And they were going to make a decision 2 to 3 weeks later, correct? Didn't they take your decision? My understanding is they, and Brian, hang on. They took your decision and said, great job. Thank you for the in-depth work. We appreciate all the comments, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then the decision was supposed to be made within 4 weeks?
Essentially. It was supposed to be made next Thursday, but it's been postponed.
But it's been postponed. For what reason? What reason was were you given the postponed?
It was postponed because they would like to give an opportunity to the School Health Advisory Board to respond to the recommendations that are now being made by some nutritionists from the Community Obesity Task Force. The school board asked the nutritionists to provide their input.
And do you feel, Brian, what I'm getting from Brian is that the guy went into a major, large city where you would find not just the politics maybe to be more difficult, but the depth of the problem and the width of the problem, so many more schools to take care of. Do you feel like that you've been given with this with the School Health Advisory Board? Have you been listened to, and do you feel that changes will be made even if they've been postponed?
Oh,
speak up, ma'am.
I really,
this is
I would
your
like
chance.
To. I would like to see something tangible. As proof that we're really going to move ahead and not wait for the federal government.
Do you think that you will see something tangible?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yvonne, a question for you.
Thanks, Brian. I'm going to hang up.
What do our listeners need to do to make this happen, to see their kids get the best possible nutrition, the best possible foods? How can they influence the city? Where can they make their voice heard? How can they help you and your campaign to really make this happen?
Oh, let me jump in real quick. When we put the program together, Ivana was from the School Health Advisory Board, and just I believe in the last week you have come out as running for school board for the city, correct?
Yeah.
So I don't want to spend too much time on that part of it because you were not invited on the program as a school board candidate, so I don't want to make it seem unfair to other potential school board candidates. But there are ways for people, whether it's to you personally or to somewhere in some place, to make their voice heard.
Two suggestions. I am maintaining dialogue with anybody who supports this idea through the petition that I started back in May, independent of the School Health Advisory Board and not as a representative of the School Health Advisory
Board. And that's where they go to yourishment.com and click on the
They would go schools. And click on school, and right on that very first page, they'll see that petition and can sign it, and that's a very easy way for me to maintain contact and suggestions. Now, people who perhaps are not interested in signing on but would like to have an impact should write directly to the school board. You can just go online to the Charlottesville City Schools school board and say, voice your opinion. Do you feel that we can do better than 35% sugar and really demand that we find out why? If not, why? Because I really believe that as a community with this many bright, intelligent people, we can figure out a way to help our nutrition services find some other even processed foods. I mean, ultimately, we want to get to whole foods made from scratch, right? I think we're all in agreement that that's the ideal. But in the meantime, what can we do next year? Not just one meal, not just two meals in a month that are cooked from scratch, but what can we do to improve the processed food that we are kind of stuck using right now?
All right, 11:54 in the wake-up call. Let me thank L. Oppelman's. They are Central Virginia's complete music headquarters. Continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg, L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars and banjos, mandolins and violins, as well as electric guitar packages. They also have complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street here in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. And this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Quick, and I don't know which of the three of you are best for this, but I did have somebody over the instant message, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but they were talking about the RAIN study, where it was determined that the Western diet will double the risk of ADHD. Dr. Lyon, are you familiar with that?
Only indirectly, but not the details of the study, but I'm familiar with that.
Do you have a comment on whether you, you know, the Western diet, as opposed, like an earlier question, had to do with healthier diets in the schools or better academic countries and what they serve their kids? I mean, is that what it is? Is it the Western diet that's what it's opposed to, or is it a school problem?
It's a complex. Without going into details, certainly a lot of this research is that study was done very well. One of the challenges is with the diet, you have an industry and social and cultural networks that also can impact the incidence of these neurodevelopmental conditions, including ADD and ADHD. Is it the food that goes to the mother while she's pregnant and impacting the developing fetus? Is it the child? So in terms of finding causality, that's always quite challenging.
There was an interesting study reported in Lancet, a major British medical journal, recently, where they took 100 adults and children with ADD and ADHD and put them on an elimination diet and found that 60% had total clearing or improvement of the ADHD when they eliminated certain foods. In our practice, we find that many kids, and these are some of our happiest patients and their parents, many kids have a particular food allergy, often wheat or dairy, and when they eliminate that, their symptoms, whether they're the cognitive symptoms in ADHD or sometimes emotional symptoms in OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, or depression, or behavioral problems, disappear. So food influences these things tremendously, and a healthy diet in the schools would probably eliminate a lot of the behavioral and learning problems that children experience.
Yeah, people should really take a look at Google Appleton, Wisconsin. They actually went to producing more of their foods from scratch and found huge differences. This was a school for children with difficulties, let's say, with studies, and the changes were dramatic. The other thing to kind of keep in mind is that over 25 years ago in New York City, there was a study done that took all of 803 public schools in New York City, reduced sugar to 11%. 11%, right?
And currently here it's 35%?
35%. So what they found was standardized test scores that up until that point had gone up 1 point up or 1 point down actually increased on a national test scores 5%.
All right, we got phenomenal. A very short time left, but let's see. Stuart, do you have a quick question?
Yeah, I was curious as to what kind of input parents could have into menu planning in a program like this, as to whether or not maybe they would have the possibilities to vote on a menu selection prior to a school year's beginning, just to kind of like have more input and more involvement in the community and with the PTA Association.
All right, thanks, man.
Absolutely. I think that your PTA is the first place to go with that kind of a suggestion. And, you know, you can actually contact, most of schools have a website that connects you directly to nutrition services, and you should email and make a request for that. A couple of provisions we have in the current the regulations that are being debated. One is that we will have school food services at the very least provide labels, nutritional labels and ingredient labels for all the items that they're providing and components of the foods they're providing to children in our schools, so that parents who are interested can actually go online and take a look at these and see if they would like to have their kid eat them or not.
All right. Thanks, Stuart. All right. It is time to finish up our program. Thanks to Dr. Paul Lyons, Dr. Marty Albert, and Ivana Cadilla. Thank you so much for
Thank
being
you,
here.
Rick.
We could have gone
Thank
on
you.
For another hour with this
Thank
quite
you.
Easily.
At least.
You can pick up the program on CVillePodcast.com. You're welcome to put in your comment, ask your question, and I'll make sure that our guests find that. And Yourishment, not nourishment, but Y-O-U-R, Yourishment.com. All right. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.